So where are we headed right now?
Gonna go to just through the street so you see the different areas. And you wanted to go to where I started living?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll do that before we go to, because it's all on the way.
Hi, I'm Haya Panchwani.
And I'm Jalen Green. Welcome back to The City Was Black, a six-part audio series exploring what it means to live in New York.
And how the city has evolved through the point of view of what it means to be black in New York City right now.
We're at a critical point in New York history. And as you'll learn throughout this podcast, the city would not be the rich melting pot of cultures it is right now without the contributions of black people.
There isn't a single issue in the city right now that doesn't impact black people, whether that's immigration, housing, or education. The future of New York City will depend on how black communities and other minorities survive in the city. Last episode, we spoke about how black people got to the city. For some, it was early in the 17th century. But Carmen Daniels migrated from Guyana to New York City when she was 33 years old. 42 years later, she's living in East New York. Jalen drove around with her for a day.
Before Carmen moved from Guyana, she was a school teacher. She taught there for over a dozen years, living with her husband and 9-year-old daughter until around 1982. During that time, Guyana's economic crisis made it difficult for people to access food, including Carmen.
I could not find enough to feed my child with because food items were unavailable.
New York City has always been a place where people come searching for a better life. Carmen may not have realized it at first, but when she came to New York in 1983, her first apartment in Crown Heights was home to a large West Indian population.
And that's just one example. Since the early 19th century, Jewish communities from Russia and Poland, alongside immigrant groups from Germany, Ireland, and England, began settling in different waves across the city. They formed tight-knit communities across the five boroughs, raising families and combining their traditions into daily life. That helped transform New York into the cultural melting pot it's known as today.
Moncho Lopez is the curator with the Museum of the City of New York.
From Mali, from Niger, from Nigeria, from the Ivory Coast, from Senegal, that they're moving into the city, particularly to the Bronx. Many of them my neighbors in Mothaven in the South Bronx, but also to Harlem.
But when she got here, Carmen searched months for work, finding it increasingly difficult to get a teaching job.
I had to go back to school, and I used to be so upset because they would say to me, oh, you know your job. It's like you're looking at somebody who's been in the system for 17 years, and I came here, I've been a teacher for 17 or 18 years already. And you're telling me I look like I know my job.
In the mid to late 19th century, many immigrants took unskilled jobs in street construction, docks, factories, and sanitation. Most found work through informal networks of family, neighbors, or others from the same hometown or ethnic community. Carmen told us that while getting her teaching license, she worked for a construction company in the Bronx making $250 a week, which, at the time, when her rent was $213 per month for her apartment, was manageable. But Carmen longed for a house for herself and her family.
Around the 1970s, New York was close to running out of money after pouring massive funds into its urban renewal projects, and businesses started moving out of the city. As the city tightened its budget, public spending cuts led to fewer affordable housing developments, deteriorating schools, and declining city services. This lack of funding emptied out neighborhoods, especially in the Bronx, Brooklyn, and parts of Queens, causing an increase in crime and homes to become very cheap.
This eventually brought new economic growth as rich newcomers came into the city, but it also set the stage for a new wave of urban revitalization. By the 1990s, Manhattan was booming again, and housing prices surged as new businesses came through the 2000s and 2010s.
All kinds of stores popped up. Latte store. Getting the same deli that wasn't serving nothing but cold cuts and bread. Started to make your own salad, fresh.
Do you think that's made the neighborhood worse?
No, it has made the neighborhood better, but why couldn't it be done when we were living there is the question I ask all the time. Why we don't get that kind of service? Even the grocery stores, you should see the difference.
As real estate increased and gentrification grew, the money from Carmen's teaching salary couldn't keep up with rising rents. The neighborhood shifted toward more adult-only, work-from-home residents, and she was eventually forced to find a new place to live.
I mean, the Bronx is today incredibly expensive, but still not as expensive as Manhattan. All of Manhattan, including Harlem, it has become impossibly expensive.
Carmen was living in East Flatbush when she began searching for a permanent home. At the time, she was renting, something she said she'd never grown used to since leaving Guyana. She'd rented several places in Brooklyn, but what she really wanted was her own home for her family.
When Carmen initially decided to buy a house, she found one listed for $248,000 that she was going to buy. But when the lawyer handed her the contract, additional fees had pushed the price to more than three times the original amount, a price Carmen could not afford to pay.
I said, "Sir, you made a mistake on this contract." I said, "What you mean? I didn't make a mistake." I said, "Yes, you did. Because how could a household $248,000 become this money here?"
The median household income by the early 2000s was around $72,000, while the average home price was $1 million in Manhattan and about $251,000 in Brooklyn. That's according to the NYU Furman Center, which conducts research on housing, land use, and urban policy. She'd been going to St. Paul Community Baptist Church since 1991 and had heard about the work they were doing to help people own their homes affordably.
I couldn't afford a home at the beginning. The department head was paying $18,000 a year, and we could barely make ends meet. So, but I tried saving and trying to buy me a home.
Still searching for a new home, she applied for the church's affordable Nehemiah housing in East New York that her church helped build.
This church would keep us updated about when the next phase of the Nehemiah would come, and they always talked about affordable homes, and I realized that, hey, I couldn't buy a traditional home.
And for Carmen, things were starting to look up for her and her family as they got a new home.
I could have done two times of my nine mortgage for the same rent I was paying, so I did the same thing. I was able to pay it off. And the rest is just...
But the housing struggle Carmen once faced has only worsened in New York.
Vicky Bean, co-director of the NYU Furman Center for Real Estate and Urban Policy, agrees that New York City is currently facing its worst housing affordability crisis in decades. Rents and housing prices have climbed far faster than incomes, and the city hasn't built enough housing in the neighborhoods where people want and need to live. As a result, tenants have been facing a rent burden, spending far more than they can reasonably afford, and are experiencing deteriorating housing conditions that have become widespread, often feeding into one another.
Nearly a third of New York City renters spend 50% or more of their income on rent, far above the recommended affordability threshold. The median renter spends around 31% of their income just on housing.
I don't see too many people, and I don't have too many reasons to be hopeful that the city is taking this issue of class seriously enough to really make the existence and the preservation of the New York City that we love a sustainable proposition. It will be New York City. New York City will always exist, but will it be the New York City that the whole world has come to love, admire, look forward to, look up to?
The city's new mayor, Zoran Mamdani, has made housing a central focus of his agenda. He's pushed for efforts to cut red tape, stabilize rents, and explore more cost-efficient ways to build new homes. His administration is also bringing together public agencies, private developers, and nonprofit housing groups to look for long-term collaborative solutions to the city's affordability crisis.
If organizations, individuals, and government can move past small fixes and embrace bold joint action, New York City can set a new standard for affordability and equity in urban life, one that keeps the doors of opportunity open for generations to come.
In the next episode, we stop at churches and mosques in New York City to find out how religion helped liberate Black New Yorkers and continues to be an important cultural center for Black survival in the rapidly changing city.
This is The City Was Black with your host, Haya Panjwani, and me, Jalen Green. This series is produced with guidance from AP Managing Editors Ron Vampel and Aaron Morrison. Special thanks to our guests and contributors, Carmen Daniels, Dion Williams, Carmen's daughter, Vicky Bean and the NYU Furman Center, Sarah Seidman and Mancho Lopez from the Museum of the City of New York, and everyone at the Metro Industrial Areas Foundation.
Thanks for listening.